Automated Creative are on a mission to reinvent advertising using artificial intelligence. We're a small team of startup folk who are really changing the way that advertising works. In the last few years, we've worked with brands like Adidas, Samsung, Diageo, Reckitt, KFC, Pernod Ricard, Bose, Unilever, GSK, Mondelez, the list goes on. And we are looking for account management talent. So if you know anyone who is kind of obsessed with creativity, ads, AI, and account management, if you could get them to email Rhoda at automatedcreative.net. That's Rhoda, R-H-O-D-A, at automatedcreative.net. And I will love you forever. On with the show. Hello and welcome to the Shiny New Object Podcast. My name is Tom Arleton. I'm the founder of Automated Creative, and this is a podcast about the future of marketing. Every week or so, I have the pleasure and the privilege of interviewing one of our industry's leaders. And this week is no different. I'm on a call with Rory McEntee, who is Brand and Marketing Director at Gymbox. Rory, for those in the audience who don't know who you are and what you do, could you give them a bit of an overview?
I will. How are you, Tom? You well?
I am well. And you are in the absolute minority of people that actually ask me that on this podcast. So I've been straight to the top of the class.
I've been raised well, a good Irish mother. And actually, yes, so I am the brand and marketing director at Gymbox. And actually, speaking of my mother, if you asked her what I do, she'd probably just say I make posters and videos look pretty, which is as far as I kind of get with her. But I think I'd probably say I do a little bit more than that. My background is I've got a mix of agency and brand marketing, 15 or so years in London now, and I really like to kind of create disruptive content, particularly, you know, with challenger brands and you know, as well as Gymbox. Some of my career highlights have been with Paddy Power, working on some quite controversial campaigns with them, kind of Nicholas Bentner, Lucky Pants in the Euros, and also with Everyman Cinema for quite a number of years. So a real mix of kind of leisure, sport, entertainment brands is probably how I'd sum myself up.
Right, great. Good to get the word underpants into a career summation. So that is super impressive career-wise. I had no idea. Congratulations. But I'm assuming outside of those like high points, there have been some low ones. What has been an absolute facepalm disaster moment in that career that you're willing to share on a public podcast?
You know what? I've had so many. I've made so many kind of mistakes and fuck ups over the years that I'm trying to think of my highlights. You know, funny enough, it seems probably quite trivial now, but it's probably one major fuck up was, you know, it actually has set me up. I think it was quite early in my career. Probably about 12 years ago now, when I worked for Everyman Cinema, which, if any of your audience is aware, they're quite a unique independent boutique cinema. When I was with them, there were probably eight locations in London. They're now kind of UK and looking to go international, so they're becoming quite big. But it was my first, I moved over from an agency to a brand role, like kind of over to the dark side. And I was a really cocky kind of young marketeer at the time. And I remember they were launching their first ever kind of quarterly magazine. We were selling adverts to kind of Sony and Studio Canal and Fox, and quite a big deal actually. And I remember I was leading that, and it was my first big campaign. And I remember putting a shitload of work into it. And the day the magazine was printed, we had so many rewrites and edits, and the day it was printed, we sent it out. And I sent a massive email to the whole company. And it was a movie years ago called Invictus. I don't know if you remember it.
Yeah, Nelson
Mandela.
The rugby one, what was that?
The rugby one. And on the front page of the magazine, basically summed it up. And it was Morgan Freeman stars in Invictus, the true story of Nelson Mandela. And it was a simple typo from story to stroy. I just got the O and the R mixed up. Ugh. And for somebody who was so cocky and bigging himself up, it was the smallest, you know, simplest mistakes, but it was probably my greatest fuck up, because it probably kind of changed how I am now a little bit. And I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated. It didn't cost the company a huge amount of money, but it was just a proper, like, character assassination of me, really. It was just one of those things. I was gutted. I still have it on my wall, actually, as a reminder.
did it go out or did you have to
it went everywhere? No, it went everywhere. Oh, every cinema we had, and that's it. The first one, it went to all the distributors who paid thousands of pounds to get into their target audience and in these posh cinemas. And I've never lived it down. I still know a couple of the guys at Everyman. Everyone that remembers me as the man who couldn't spell story, which is quite ironic for somebody in communications who prides himself on a storyteller and doing great content.
Did you go to like an Afrikaans colloquial dictionary to work out if "stroy" was like some kind of?
Yeah, I was trying to try to find a way to kind of, you know, swing it and say, no, I did that on purpose. Actually, what it means is it's, you know, said African kind of term of endearment.
It's going to raise awareness. It's going to buck the trend. You know,
absolutely.
You're defying best practice there.
And funnily enough, they actually did a throwback Thursday on social media to their first ever magazine about, God, I think it was 6 months ago now. And they actually took the time to Photoshop it out to make and correct the spelling error, which again, it just rubs salt in the wound that they all remember. So yeah, it was a bit, you know, as I say, it was, I look back at it now, but it really helped me, you know, as I say, it was about 12, 13 years ago, but it's kind of set me up in terms of just making sure I really kind of, I've sweated the details, as I like to call it, ever since, where I get really involved in making sure everything is passes my desk before it goes out. But also reminded me to not stress over, you know, important stuff, because, you know, we're not trying to cure cancer here. We're peddling kind of cinema tickets. And so, yeah, it kind of put things in perspective as my career has gone on.
So I feel weird asking you this question, given that I know you can't spell, but do you read marketing books? Is that within your skill set?
I think it's probably going to be a common theme on this particular podcast. I hate books, and I particularly like hate business and marketing books. I find them so bloody boring. Even more so, any of those kind of chicken for the soul, help self books. And, you know, I read fiction a bit on holiday, just because you're laying on the beach and you've got to do something. And I like it, the odd fiction book, but I do, you know what, there is one particular book that I kind of come back to again and again. And that's a book called Be More Pirate by a guy called Sam Cunniff. And he is an ex kind of ad man and certainly a brand consultant. And, you know, I don't know if you're aware of it, but it's a really different book to these kind of business books. I know a lot of books have challenger brands and pirates, but this one actually, you know, it kind of taps into my kind of ethos of doing things differently and challenging the norms, like the old pirates did of Blackbeard. And he kind of puts parallels into Elon Musk and Banksy. And it's, you know what? And like all these other books, it's actually really funny. And it doesn't take itself too seriously.
And what's the main bit of advice in the book? What's the thing you take away and use on a daily basis or, you know, regular basis?
Yeah. You know what? I think there's a few things that, you know, he references, you know, there's all these kind of buzzwords and gimmick words, what he calls the pirate code. But there are things in there like, you know, initially it's like, you know, who do you want to take down? So it's quite a workshoppy style bit. And like, whether that's your ex-colleagues or employers that you left and you want to show off in terms of how good and how you've made it, to how you want to take down your competitors or, you know, platforms like Instagram. Or so it's quite clever in terms of it gives you kind of actual takeaways and, you know, things around like what holds you back in life. So it makes you take an inward look at yourself, whether that's your own habits or things you let other people get away with. So it's quite a practical in its application. Actually, you can go, you know what, this has held me back in this role. I need to change my mindset, or in terms of get a campaign out, how do I break the rules? What would it be like if I wanted to break a rule? What would that rule be? And actually, for me, working for a challenger brand, it's quite a good ethos and a kind of good place to kind of look at and start with my thinking. It's a great book. And you know what? Really, really funny. Really funny and gripping.
No, this isn't really, or maybe this is marketing, I don't know. But
I think pirates have done really well out of history. Like, you know, my daughter plays with like pirate toys. Like, pirates were awful. Like, let's like say what it is. They were murdering shitbags that went around like nicking other people's stuff. And yet they've sort of been homogenized or like rounded in such a way that it's just like, it's more of a fashion statement, isn't it? It's like,
you know, it is.
Ripped shorts and a stripy top and a parrot. And you're like, everyone loves you. But really like that, you know, that. Anyway, nothing to do with marketing. Bit of a beef with pirates. I think they've done quite well out of history.
Yeah, they're cool guys, but actually, if you look at them, they're pretty horrible.
Absolutely worst.
But you'd rather be a pirate than be in the Navy. So, you know, that's marketing for you.
Right. So we are going to now move on to your top marketing tip. Have you got a silver bullet bit of advice for the industry?
I do actually, Tom. You know what? This particular piece of advice came when I worked at Paddy Power back in the day. And essentially, it is ask for forgiveness, not permission. And that was a real kind of focus of the brand, which I've taken with me throughout my career and all the way now into Gymbox. You know, it was an eye opener on, you know what, there's probably the two areas of it. There was kind of, you know, people would always say, you know, God, Paddy Power being so reactive, how did they get that workout so quickly? And I think it was kind of just born out of this kind of just do things and don't ask anybody and we'll see what happens. Like, you know, we managed to get away with it most of the time. And I mentioned earlier on pants, our lucky pants idea when we gave stuff to Nicholas Bentner, and when he scored a goal, he showed our branding on his pants. And, you know, we didn't ask UEFA for permission on that. We wouldn't have been able to get it through the right channel. So we just did it directly with him and, you know, didn't ask for permission. We didn't even really ask for forgiveness on that particular one because, you know, we nailed it. But, you know, we did it at Cheltenham where we put signs up. We did tweets in the sky for the Ryder Cup. And that was always kind of on a macro level, like we always going in the back door and never really asking for permission to go through the right channels. And I actually think, you know, taking that in with Gymbox, we did our Joe Wicks campaign for reopening, which was, you know, we didn't ask Joe Wicks, can we do it? We just plastered his name all over billboards and didn't ask for any permission. And thankfully he loved it and we didn't have to get lawyers involved, which was, you know, woohoo for everyone. So I think that on a kind of macro level was, you know, the whole kind of asking for forgiveness, not permission. And I think for me on a micro level, it's kind of, we're putting a few buzzwords in here, but you know, because that was instilled in me way back when, it was almost like fuck the red tape. You know, don't, if you involve too many people, my tip would be don't involve too many people in decision-making, kind of don't procrastinate. You'll miss out on that kind of topical, quick turnaround of an advert that we are famous for now at Gymbox. It's almost like kind of get that towel down the beach. Sometimes we, you know, we want to commit to something, but we don't know what we're going to do yet. So we just kind of crack on and see what happens.
It's all very exciting. And if I was like, I don't know, 21-year-old marketing grad, I'd be like, you know, bouncing off the walls with the creative possibility of just not caring what anyone thinks. But what do you do if you're Unilever or you're a financial services brand or, you know, someone who has 19 levels of sign off? How do you bring that forgiveness, not permission attitude into your work?
You know what? I think it goes back to culture. It goes back to the culture of the business. I've been very lucky to work for kind of smaller kind of brands where that ethos has kind of come from the top down. I think you've got to get that from the top down. You know, some of the big brands like Unilever, it's a huge challenge. You know, how do you give autonomy to the younger, quick idea pieces? You know, I look at Specsavers, who are quite a big brand, a big company. They've managed to do it. And I think, you know, without knowing the guys in there, you can see that they've obviously changed something internally to kind of give, I think you've got to give your marketing team and your creative in particular, your agencies, whoever you work with, a little bit of license to fuck things up occasionally.
This episode of the Shiny New Object podcast is brought to you in partnership with Manfest.
Whether it's live in London or streamed online to the global marketing community, you can always expect a distinctive and daring blend of fast-paced content, startup innovation pitches, and unconventional entertainment from Madfest events. You'll find me causing trouble on stage, recording live versions of this podcast, and sharing a beer with the nicest and most influential people in marketing. Check it out at www.madfestlondon.com.
So we're going to weirdly make the odd segue to your shiny new object, which is visual search. So quite with that start of this, the start of this podcast has been really entertaining and very colourful. And we're going into search, which is known for its colour. But anyway, tell me, what is visual search in your eyes and why is it your shiny new object?
Well, I think, you know, first of all, to give a bit of credit, I think we weaved this in quite well with my lack of spelling and reading. So visual search feels like a nice kind of a nice bit of flow. So look, for me, visual search is, you know, not to be confused with image search. It's actually a way to upload images directly onto our World Wide Web and pull, similar images to you in order to kind of identify or to potentially buy something. So, you know, my view and kind of my, certainly me, I think people have always been visual and our brains are kind of wired for images over text. So, you know, I've always been a bit of, I don't know what I want, but I'll know when I'll see it kind of attitude.
You must be a great client.
Yeah, I know. I have no idea what I want. I just want a great ad. But it, you know, it's something. I'll tell you. I must admit, I didn't know a lot about it up until, you know, quite recently, because, you know, my interest in it really peaked because I've been looking at my audience, Gymbox, and they are getting older. We're kind of more premium, a premium brand, and younger people, you know, there might be a bigger barrier to entry. So I've been looking at kind of new ways to attract people through our kind of targeted marketing. And I've been looking at kind of TikTok and Snapchat and a few others. And this kind of area quite it really intrigues me. I'm still working out all the different ways we can use it, but it really intrigues me in terms of, you know, I think the fashion and homeware brands do it quite well. And it's in its early, it's in its infancy, really. It's nowhere near its potential.
I need you to be a bit more specific on like how would a user use visual search? I know this might seem like an obvious question, but someone's out in their daily life doing a thing. How would they use visual search to connect with a brand?
Well, I'll give you an example of one that I've been looking at recently. So on Snapchat, they've kind of partnered with Amazon. So if you're on your phone and you see, let's say you and I are sitting there and Tom and having a nice cup of coffee, and I go, that's a nice shirt. And I take a picture of your shirt when you're not looking. And I essentially, Amazon will troll through their database and find me similar looking shirts that I can then buy within one click.
And what's the Snapchat connection here?
The Snapchat one is just a partnership the guys did in terms of, I think they're probably the leaders in terms of actually kind of the transaction purchasing. I think, you know, you can do it. Google Lens is essentially the big one, I think, which is going to be more mainstream, where you're going to see a lot of the majority of people kind of going on. So Google Lens is now, if you go onto your browser on your phone, you've obviously got the microphone for audio. I think you're going to see Google Lens going on there very shortly. And I think the idea is you can upload anything to identify it, whether that is a piece of clothing. I think you can even take a photograph of a dog to find out what breed of dog it is, which is quite bizarre.
But if you took a picture of my shirt on Snapchat, before you upload that to Snapchat, it gives you information on the shirt? Or is it like once, if people see that photograph within your profile, does it then go, oh, you can also buy this shirt? How did that bit work?
Yeah, so you don't kind of post it onto your own channel as such. It's a slightly different button you click in the most simple terms. So, you know, another way of doing it is, you know, let's just say you're, you know, again, we're in our scenario, we're having our cup of coffee, and I see that light in the corner. That would look lovely in my bedroom. I can just take a picture on Google Lens. So I have to open Google Lens. I'll take a photograph of that particular lamp on Google Lens, and that will upload it into Google for me. And that will tell me that I can buy a lamp or a similar looking lamp on Wayfair or on IKEA, and it will give me all the different options of that. And then I can literally buy it there and then.
And so what can brands do to take advantage of that behavior? And I'm assuming that is a very, very small slice of the search pie. But as you say, if Google are embedding it within the browser now, that you can see that becoming more apparent. And with people using QR codes because of COVID, I think it's, you know, that sort of physical digital interfaces seems to be a bit more apparent. But say if I'm, I don't know, like the Tom's Coffee Cup company, like how do I get people to my brands from a visual search?
So I guess, look, this is the bit that I think whoever does that's going to, in my opinion, particularly in that kind of e-commerce world, will clean up. I think, you know, the adoption is quite low at the moment. I think that's the biggest challenge within it. I think people are obviously, you know, it will help with SEO and will help drive business to sites. But I think users kind of have this tendency to have a bit of impatience for technology when it first comes up, and it is a bit imperfect at the moment. But ultimately, it'll be creating brands that create tags on images. So, for example, that light actually being able to do your SEO and metadata behind it, which is all kind of above my pay grade. I have great agencies who do this sort of stuff. Where actually, when you're taking a photograph of that particular lamp, you're getting pulled into IKEA over Wayfair. For example, and I think it's quite novel. It's a bit of a novelty at the moment. I don't think it's going to take off for a little while just yet. But you got to remember, I love a stat. I was doing a bit of research, and you know, you got over 60% of millennials and Gen Z want to use visual search over all other types of search, and they want to actually just purchase stuff via visual search because they're so visual. Now, every brand's going to treat it slightly differently. I think from a gym point of view, it's you know, a little bit odd. You know, how do I just upload a picture of a gym? Why would I join a gym? But I actually, you know, we build gyms for people now nationwide. And if you're in a gym and you take a picture of a bike that you quite like, you could actually order that from our website in the future. That's kind of my vision of where you could take it. But it's all very similar in terms of SEO tracking and tagging that you will have to kind of, beyond words and text, it's going to be about images.
Well, imagine it could be some kind of weird affiliate gig. So if you, in your gym, you've got like, I don't know, instructors or whatever wearing cool Nike trainers. And if someone visual searched those Nike trainers and someone bought them, you could get some kickback because it was in a sort of certain geography.
Yeah, something like that would be great. Because, and actually, you know what? You touch on a really other, like a great point around the whole kind of social listening piece, which is, you know, you've got so many people who take pictures in the gym with their, you know, their selfies post-workout or their bike set up or their equipment. And if we can see what, you know, apparel they're wearing or what tech they've got on or water bottles, you know, we could kind of take all those learnings, will give us kind of marketing and partnership data for the brand, and how do we kind of retarget them and work with different partners? Like, it's quite exciting. As I say, it's piqued my interest. It's my new kind of shiny new object. I'm still learning about it, but actually, I think there's something really, really groundbreaking. You remember when voice search came out years ago with Siri, and it was such a novelty. It was a load of crap, and your phone would accidentally ring somebody, and it had no kind of place. Whereas now, everything's audio, voice notes, and searches. And I really think images in the next 2-3 years is going to take over.
Well, for me, the thing that needs to get invented, and I've seen Facebook have another swipe at it, is they did a partnership this week with Ray-Bans where it's got like, they're like, you know, Snapchat specs. They were like,
yes,
that, like, but connected to Facebook, and you could record and post. And I don't think there was any kind of visual thing over the top of the glasses like a Google Glass. I'm kind of fairly confident that wasn't a thing. But then when you look at is it Nicola Mendelssohn, the Facebook primo in the UK, her talk at Madfest was about like AR and VR and, you know, like head up displays, and someone at some point is going to crack a device that doesn't make people look ridiculous, that doesn't break when you drop it, that doesn't cost 600 quid, that can give this like heads up information. So you are at Gymbox and you look at a bike or look at a towel or look at someone's trainers, and it, you know, you would give the ability to be able to go, hey, can you search for those trainers? And they would pop up. But I can see innovation directors the world over, like imagining what those headsets look like. You've had HoloLens, but they're all too heavy. They're all horrible. Yeah. They feel ghastly. They're too expensive. You look like an absolute wally. But someone at some point is going to come up with the equivalent of the Nokia 3310, you know, a robust device that doesn't cost that much, that always works. Do you know what I mean? And that for me is the massive, huge missing thing that I don't think we'll see in the next 10 or so years. But
no, you never know. And I think you're right. I saw those, the Ray-Ban ones with Facebook, and they do look a little bit odd. And it feels like, you know, it feels like one of these movies like Minority Report. They need to kind of get there and tell the future where these kind of glasses come in, because I think you're absolutely right. If somebody's in the gym, they're able to kind of upload something, whether that, you know, because everyone's staring at each other in the gym, particularly Gymbox. And if you're able to kind of, I want that device, or I want that, I think it's, God, you know what, I might quit here and get into AR and VR, because there's something huge in that. What it is, as I say, no idea. But there is something big in it.
So Rory, unfortunately, we are at the end of the podcast now. If someone wants to get in touch with you about their amazing AR, VR, visual search idea, how do you want them to get in touch with you?
Do you know what? LinkedIn is probably the best for me, Tom. If anybody wants to reach out, you'll find me really easily.
And I always ask this question, how do you want them to write to you? What makes a good outreach?
Ooh, that's a great question. I like that. You know what? I'll tell you what doesn't make one. Anyone who sends me videos or they're holding A4 papers, dear Rory, and they're in their bedroom kind of going from page to page, like Love Actually.
Right.
Don't
that
do that. Yeah, it happened. It happened.
That happens. That happened more than once.
It happened twice, actually. It might have been the same company. But anyway, yes, it was.
Strange. Like an automated thing or?
Yeah, it was like a they sent me a video of them in their bedroom with, you know, 10 A4 papers saying, "Dear Rory, great to meet you." They're just flicking through the papers saying,
and it was all real, or was it?
Yeah, absolutely. It was strange. It was so strange.
Oh, you've missed an opportunity there. You could have asked people to be more outrageous, like getting to do half nude, stood on their edges.
Yeah, it was really creepy. So don't do that. Please don't do that. And also don't. Anybody that has kind of emojis or rockets or unicorns in their titles, or they tell me they're going to make shit happen, I'd struggle with that. I'll tell you, just make it. My advice would be make it authentic. Perhaps research me or the brand so it grabs attention. I had this 4 years ago, a designer reached out to me and did an advert for something around Boris Johnson, and it just grabbed my attention. We ended up using the advert, and I still work with him now. So he kind of did a little bit of thinking, and you could tell it was really well done. Just a really simple, authentic email, and something that added a bit of value. And you know what? We still work together now, 4 years later.
Rory, thank you so much.
Great to be on, Tom. Thank you so much.
Hi, just before you go, I'd really appreciate it if you could take the time to write a review of the Shiny New Object podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, whatever it's called these days, or whichever podcast provider you use. We're an indie podcast, so it would go a long way for us if you could just share the word and give us a bit of a support on those channels. That'd just be fantastic. If you haven't got time, that's also cool. And yeah, if you could tell your colleagues about the podcast, and also, if possible, don't forget to subscribe. And I'd love to hear your feedback. If you'd like to speak on the podcast or be a guest, or you think I'm asking the wrong questions, anything, I'd be super interested to hear what you think. So please email me at tom@automatedcreative.net. That's T-O-M at, I'm not going to bother spelling it. Anyway, you'll work it out. Thanks so much.